Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
It was discovered 25 miles off the coast of Maine by a lobster fisherman. The tip of a rusted rung ladder, patinated and crusted with barnacles, jutting up through the ocean's glassy skin. You haven't heard about it on the news. You wouldn't have. The Navy buttoned it down faster than you can say Semper Fortis. Sonoscan showed the ladder descended in a vertical line for 8 miles. That's 6 miles past the ocean floor, disappearing into a newly discovered trench that made Mariner look like the shallow end of a pool. Okay, I'm being facetious, but it goes without saying that higher-ups were concerned. Who the hell had built a ladder in the middle of the ocean? Where'd this trench come from? Aliens? Russia? That's where I came in. I was a medic officer in the Navy's oceanography program, working on experimental... Never mind. Not that it doesn't matter, it does. But if I talk about what I did, who I am, and why I'm here, I'd no doubt wake up in a trapdoor with a noose around my neck and treason charges being read by a guy in a starched uniform. I figure there's a damn good chance that might happen anyway. Still, I'm compelled to document this because, well, people deserve to know what I saw. The things that haunt the back of my eyelids when I close them at night. I'm in a military hospital right now, laid up in my own private suite. I'm trying to heal, but without rest, it's proving impossible. I figure getting this out of my system might help. I hope it will at least. But what do they say in Shawshank? Hope is a dangerous thing. Anyway, I was never great at beginnings, but I guess I should start with the dive. We called it a submersible, but it was a suit. This was no Jules Verne clunky, cumbersome, sink like a rock diving suit. It was lightweight, pressure resistant, and equipped with all the bells and whistles that lent it its not unfair nickname, Iron Man. That's not to say it was one of those skin-tight jobs you see scuba divers wearing. It looked more like those suits guys defusing bombs in war zones wear. That aside, I was thankful there wasn't going to be a 60-pound oxygen tank misaligning my spine. The Iron Man was equipped with an electrolysis filter which converted ocean water into breathable oxygen. The whole shebang was invisible on enemy radars and could supposedly withstand a descent of this stature. Not that it had been tested. Basically, I'd be crawling down an ominous 8-mile ocean ladder in an experimental suit that had only been tried in Navy swimming pools. My colleagues seized on this predicament, jokingly calling me Laika in the hours leading up to the dive. In case you're not familiar, Laika was the dog Soviets shot up into space in the 50s. The dog who died. So, as I stood on the hem of a small Navy vessel, also experimental, looking at the first few rungs of the ocean ladder, which sat 20 feet off the starboard, I wondered if this was my last taste of fresh air. "I hope your lunch wasn't too risky," my colleague Matilda joked with a smirk. "Blowing gas in that thing, you'll probably suffocate." I smiled, but behind my smile were nerves, raw, tingling nerves. I think she saw, because her hand landed on my shoulder. "You'll do fine, Jones." This time, I smiled for real, hoping she was right. A nearby tech asked me if I was ready. I nodded, and the bulky submersible's helmet descended me like a meteor. It really was Iron Man. The big window visor in the front of the helmet doubled as a screen, with oxygen and depth readings, as well as direct comms to and from my people above the surface. There was a POV camera which fed them my perspective as well, so they could monitor and record my descent, which had started an hour ago. I climbed down, rung after rung, daylight fading as it descended into the murky depths. Fish darted past, a little twist of seaweed rolled by. It was all very pastoral, and oddly existential. The ocean, I'm talking the vast, naked depths of it, is huge and never-ending. Look both ways, and you see nothing but bluish-green water and swirling walls of sediment. A reminder of how incredibly small and inconsequential you are. It never much bothered me. Until the climb. Now, I'll never touch ocean water again. You good, Jones? Matilda's voice in my ear. Yeah, hun, I'm hunky-dory. My deltoids are screaming. Should have put in those hours at the gym. Where the hell are those taxpayer dollars going if you don't look good on a recruitment poster? I felt a smile creasing on my face. The budget we got, they use models for that kind of thing. What, you're telling me that strapping young stud saying forged by the sea isn't a real seaman? What the hell did I join up for? I laughed. Sheesh, if I'd have known I'd get this much one-on-one with you, I'd have put on Iron Man a long time ago. I'm here too, came Bradley's voice. Imagine a drone operator, a gangly, pimply kid raised on Call of Duty. That's Bradley. What do they say about three being a crowd? I asked. They say you're closing in on 500 meters, Bradley said. Jesus, already? I looked around, and it got darker. The ocean around me fading into a deep dark blue that bled into a murky cloud. I double-checked my tether, secure. It was a thick steel cable feeding through a pulley, a thing on rollers about the size of a brick which ran along the right outer bar of the ladder. The tether was there, in case, for some reason, I lost my grip on the narrow, rusted rungs. 'Cause if that happened, well, anyone seen gravity? I shuddered at the thought of sinking down and down with nothing and no one to save me. How's breathing? Matilda asked. I smiled at the concern in her voice, looked up at the little black eye on the top right of the visor, a camera pointing down at me. They could see my face. I could, in theory, see them too, had they decided to beam some footage onto my visor screen. But this was no time for screwing around, and my visor was filled with numerical readings. On the left side sat a small map detailing the ladder and my position, a red dot on it. I had barely made a dent. Just fine, darling. The reason we weren't using a pod submersible, a single-man coffin connected to the above by a steel cable, was because I was on the lookout for any markings that might be etched onto the ladder's metal skin, anything to denote its origin. So far, there had been nothing but barnacles, a crab exoskeleton, and a thick patina of algae. When can our ladder slide? What can you throw a movie up on my screen? This is getting tedious. I was half joking, but not really. It was boring as hell, one rung after the next. To make the descent faster, I was going to ladder slide, but I couldn't do that until I hit certain water pressure. Some geeky nonsense about how it would be easier to control the descent. The tether wouldn't be a problem there. The pulley was built to eat through rocks and had been satisfyingly crunching through barnacles the whole way down. Once you hit 1,000 meters, Bradley's voice. You guys pick that number out of a hat. The deeper you go, the greater the pressure bearing down on you is. Makes it easier to control. Damn, I must have skipped that day in school. I joked, partly. It was in the orientation, Bradley said, not trying to hide his irritation. I think he must have been jealous of my rapport with Matilda. I skipped that too. Matilda chuckled. I smiled again, even though I hadn't been joking. Closing in on 750 meters like her, Matilda said, calling me that goddamn dog. Better hope I've got a little more luck on my bones than rusty canines, I said, secretly hoping I was right. I'd hate for you guys to fish me up and just find my naked skeleton. You've got charm. That's got to be worth something, Matilda said, a smile in her voice. Is it worth dinner next week? Bradley groaned. God, you guys make me sick. I chuckled. Ah, don't get blue, kiddo. You can carry the rings at the wedding. Matilda laughed. Dinner first. Where? I know this great place called the Base Cafeteria. 8 o'clock, Friday. It's a date, I said, continuing down into the abyss. I had worked up a killer sweat by the time I'd reached the midnight zone, which sat just past 1,000 meters. Murky blackness crushed in. It was suffocating. Eerie. I clicked on my shoulder-mounted floodlights. Two powerful beams of light blasted forward and... wham! An ugly, deep-sea fish with a mouth of fangs that went whizzing by my head. I barked a pathetic yelp and jerked back, nearly losing my grip on the ladder. What's wrong? You okay? Matilda asked, concerned. I'm fine. Satan's spawn just caught me off guard. Deep-sea life? The deepest. You ready to go for the slide? Bradley said. I hesitated, suddenly not sure how I felt about plunging down at speeds unknown into the deep, inky blackness beneath me. Wish me luck, kids. Luck, Bradley and Matilda said in chorus. I sucked a deep breath, moved my hands and feet off the rungs and to the outer rails. And then, I slid. It wasn't as exciting as I thought, but it was considerably faster and less draining than climbing down. My eyes watched the ladder blur by, still on the lookout for any markings. Once or twice I skidded to a stop, thinking I'd spotted something, only to discover it was nothing but deep-sea gunk caked to the metal. By the time I did see any markings, I was too far gone for anyone to care. I stopped, not sure what I was looking at. A strange symbol etched directly into the middle of the rung in front of me. It looked like a weird cross between Arabic and Chinese. Guys, you seeing this? No reply. Finally, Matilda's voice. Jones, the footage is freaking out. You okay? I'm fine. Is this getting through? Silence. No reply. Jones, you there? Matilda, growing concerned. I said I'm cool. Bradley, distress in his voice. Buddy, you getting this? Just fine. Can you hear me? I felt panic squeezing at my lungs. Was the comm system screwing up? My screen began to flicker, glitching out. I was growing concerned. Jones, you're not coming through. I reached up to my visor and gave it a smack. The readings on the screen momentarily realigned before spazzing out beyond control. Now, my colleagues' voices were warbled. Words were lost, full of static. Jones, can't hear you. Are you... Guys, I can't hear you, fear in my voice. A low hum built in my ears. And then, silence. No voices, nothing. My helmet basked in the glow of the flickering screen. I lost contact with the world above. I froze, not sure what to do. Split between the symbol and the rung, and the disconnect from my safety net. Well, that's not completely true. Remember the tether connecting me to the rung ladder? There was a little button on the poly box beneath the lucite case. Punch that button, and the poly box would zip me back up to the surface. Okay, screw it. I was going back up. None of this was worth a damn if I didn't have my crew watching my back. I fumbled out an underwater camera stashed in the pouch of my chest, snapped a photo of the symbol, and began the 10-foot climb back up to the poly box. That's when I saw the mermaid. It flitted out of view, the silhouette of a man-sized fish. I froze, not sure what I'd seen. It had only been there for an instant, etched in the beam of my floodlights. Then, it was gone. Had I really seen anything? My breath was shallow, cold in my helmet. I looked to my right. The water was black and murky. I looked to my left, and at first I didn't realize what I was seeing. A wall of bodies. Hundreds of mermaids surrounded me, their eyes glowing pinpricks in the light, their needle-sharp teeth jagged and yellow. They were awful, deep-sea things, their tails yellow and scaly, their torsos pale and emaciated. Instead of arms, they had straw-thin appendages with hooked tips. When my light hit them, they broke apart, darting off into the darkness in a cacophony of shrill chitters. "Jesus," I whispered, my voice hoarse, my throat like sandpaper. I looked up and saw the pulley box 5 rungs away, the button taunting me, the button that would save me. Or maybe I was already past the point of saving. I didn't wait. I climbed, fast as I could go, 1 rung after the next. 4 rungs, 3, 2. A shrill chittering split through the water. I looked to my left as a mermaid shot toward me, its hooked appendages clawing at my suit. I grunted and threw up a defensive arm. A razor shredded through my flesh. Blood plumed out of my ruined arm. I cried out. My suit beeped, screaming warnings in my ear. The mermaid flew off, and in came another. I threw the button box on the pulley open, about to slam it down when a freight train barreled through my midsection. The horrible, twisted face of a mermaid filled my visor. It had torn me off the ladder. I floated, entangled with this awful creature. Its gills undulated as it chittered in my face. A great, ear-shredding sound that cut a bolt of fear through my stomach like an icy dagger. I grunted and jammed my fingers into its gills, hating the way its flesh cracked as I twisted. Now the mermaid was struggling out of my grip. I was winning. Then, I wasn't. Something pounded into the ladder, jarring the pulley box, and something else hammered into my back. It was like being caught in a trash compactor, a dozen of these things crushing in on me. I screamed, flailed, fought for my life. Then, suddenly, the mermaids disappeared, tails flickering as they flew off into the depths. I was alone, completely alone, floating through the water, 15 feet from the ladder. My suit was mostly okay, except for my arm which plumed blood into the ocean. I slapped the split fabric which framed my mangled flesh. The fabric self-mended, sealing off my suit. Each section of the Iron Man was isolated, so if one part got damaged, it wouldn't compromise the integrity of the whole outfit, so water wasn't flooding my helmet. Yet, it very well could be soon. There was a crack in my visor. I quickly reeled myself in, closing in on the ladder and the pulley box, which was my last and final hope. Then, I saw it. My heart sank, my stomach dropped. The pulley was nearly hanging off the ladder's rail. It was close to breaking off. If that happened, I'd simply drift, fall, die in this oppressive darkness. I moved slowly, surely, reeling myself in on the cable which rattled the box with each pull. I was lassoing the excess cable around my elbow as I went. My hands reached out, fingertips skimming the rung ladder. That's when I saw the shark. At first, I thought it may have been a mountain that slid off land some long ago year, left to float these murky depths eternally. But no, it was a shark, the biggest living thing I'd ever seen in my whole life. It must have been twice the size of a Boeing 747, a great pale monster outlined in my floodlights, eyes as big as swimming pools, its mouth. I couldn't bear to think what might be in its mouth. Oh my God. It filled my horizon, moving closer. I was paralyzed by fear, my heart jackhammering in my cage like a manic construction worker. My hands reached out for the ladder, grabbed a rung. I started to pull myself up, when the pulley box broke free of the outer rail. I looked up and slipped. My hand slipped. My other hand shot out, grasped the ladder, and then a rush of water blew me away. The shark was passing, and I was sinking, propelled downward by the force of the shark's movement, displacing impossible tons of liquid as it swam. I flailed, grunted, screamed, the readings on my visor still flashing warnings. Then I was being sucked down into the depths. The shark continued on. I drifted down, the ladder slowly, painfully pulling away from me until it faded from view. I tried calling to my people above, screaming into my helmet. At some point, I stopped, realizing they were long gone. And to them, so was I. I sunk for years. It felt that way at least, left to die, a prisoner of the ocean, stranded in a world of darkness. After a while, still sinking, I blacked out. I jolted awake at the bottom of the trench, in the ruins of a great city. Pillars of rock, spires of stone, the husks of incredible mausoleums and colosseums rose around me, greenish in their aeon old patina. The city filled the trench as far as I could see, which was oddly far, seeing as a strange, glowing orb filled my vision. It was an impossible sun, a green ball of light, pulsing and bubbling with heat, hovering off in the distance, bathing these alien depths in ethereal light. I stood up. A thin tendril of blood trailed up from the fabric from the gash on my forearm. I knew it wasn't a mortal cut, but it was nasty and left me feeling woozy. I clenched it tight with a Velcro wrap and looked around. There was nothing but dead buildings stretching endlessly. Ugly deep-sea fish cut through vacant windows and doorways. I wandered the city for a while, looking for signs of life or any vestiges of the ladder that had brought me here. I found neither. I walked for a while. Hours, days maybe. I slept some. I woke and walked more. Time must have worked differently down there. The atmosphere felt languid and disorienting. I'm not sure how long I spent wandering. I found sprawling pictographs on the inside of a domed building. They depicted an aquatic people that once ruled this underwater world. I saw 100-foot effigies of multi-headed, dragon-like beasts with a multitude of clawed legs and a variety of gills spread out across its form. Among them were other, smaller statues of the beast rolled into a ball. Sometime during my interminable sentence spent in that sunken kingdom, I realized the ball statues were depicting the beast's likeness as an infant, curled up in an egg. That gave new meaning to the glowing green orb on the horizon. Sometimes, after staring at the green sun for hours, I thought I could decipher the outline of the fetal beast wrapped in on itself, pulsing with life, waiting to be born. Eventually, my mind slipped away from me. I heard voices, Matilda's, Bradley's, a barking dog I thought might have been Laika. Sometimes I spoke to them, other times I didn't, just grateful for the company. And then, after a long, long while, I died. I was brought back to life on a lobster boat. Two grizzled mariners, with accents like molasses, found me floating listlessly and pulled me aboard. They scraped off my suit and resuscitated me on the fish-gut-strewn deck of their little lobster tug. They thought I was dead. My skin was cold, pale as a fish belly. Then I blinked to life. I took a rattling breath of fresh air, savoring the salty taste of my tongue. I looked up at the real world, at the two men around me. All I could do was cry. I was brought to a hospital, then airlifted to the one I'm in now. Matilda came to visit me immediately. She asked me what had happened. I told her. I could see in her eyes that she didn't believe me. I wouldn't believe me. I was gaunt, my hair long, my beard scraggly. I looked like I'd survived a lifetime on a desert island, except for the fact that I was ghostly pale and not sunburned to a crackling brown. But it was good seeing her, until she looked me in the eyes, told me I'd been missing for 8 months. Military man after military man came to visit me, higher-ups in crisped uniforms, weighed down by medals. I was interviewed until my head spun. My story never changed. I told them to check my handheld camera. I learned it was never recovered. Whether they didn't believe me or didn't want to wasn't entirely clear. I had my scar to back up my story, and my time spent missing. I told them to send another man down, but they gave me some bureaucratic word vomit about how the risk assessment blah blah blah. Apparently, that suit I'd taken down wasn't cheap. Who would have thought? In the end, none of what I said seemed to matter. Perhaps they figured me for a deserter who took their top secret tech and defected to God knows where. Tralfamador, maybe? All I know is that at some point or another, I was declared insane and ordered to a stint of convalescence, where I remain. I've tried to make sense of it all, but I can't. I wonder about the ladder and whether it was built as an invitation to that underwater place or as an escape. Since I've gotten back, there's been a hollow ache in the center of my chest, a low hum in the pit of my soul. It's constant. It's dread. Dread at what I've seen. Dread at what might become of the world if that thing ever rises to reclaim its kingdom. I've come to the end of my tale, and I still don't feel any better. Every time I close my eyes, I see that green sun. I see it pulsing and flickering with life. And I know for certain, it's an egg.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.